This podcast was recorded Thursday, November 12th at 10:36 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like we'll have found evidence of widespread voter fraud.
Keep looking, buddy.
Let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly quest for all those tampered ballots that exist somewhere, supposedly. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. Coming up, a look at where Ohio Democrats go from here after yet another brutal statewide defeat.
But first, a quick update on the worsening coronavirus pandemic that is pushing Governor DeWine to once again threaten to close businesses.
If the current trend continues and cases keep increasing, we will be forced to close restaurants, bars, and fitness centers.
That's Mike DeWine speaking during a Wednesday evening televised address where he issued more warnings than actual policy changes, but he did do a few small things.
Yeah, he's creating a retail compliance unit within the Bureau of Workers' Compensation to make sure businesses are enforcing the statewide mask mandate on both employees and customers.
DeWine also says open congregate areas at large ceremonies like weddings and funerals can no longer be open. He's also issuing an order requiring everyone in those settings to sit down with their masks on unless they are actively consuming food or drinks. So I guess look for a lot more drunk people at weddings so they can avoid the mask mandate.
But they can't dance. He's gone full
Footloose. How can you be drunk at a wedding and not dance?
No chicken dance. You know, I would support that.
No chicken dance.
No
I'm all for drinking at weddings.
No Macarena, no achy breaky heart. Anyway, so to be serious,
this is very serious.
I mean, it's incredible. Just 6 weeks ago, we were getting about 1,000 new cases a day, which is, you know, a significant number. Now we're getting close to 6,000. We topped 6,000 one day this week. 6,000 new cases every day. And of course, you know how it works. New cases, some of those folks go to the hospital, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks later. And then some of those folks go into the ICU unit. And then, tragically, some of those folks die.
Yeah, this is very eerily similar to what Amy Acton predicted before she left her position as director of the Department of Health. She was talking about case increases of around 6,000 to 7,000 per day if things started to get out of control. It seems to be where we're at right now. Anecdotally speaking, my wife is an ICU nurse. I can tell you that she has been very, very much busier in the last couple, 3 weeks than she was at any time during this pandemic. It's what's happening across Ohio. We've repeatedly in recent days set records for new COVID-19 hospitalizations, ICU admissions. Things are bad.
Yeah, that's the big fear, that hospital staff will become overrun. And the governor is trying to stem that. But he has been doing this now for over a month, basically saying, wear a mask, keep your distance, don't meet in large groups, wash your hands. That's been his message for the past 5 weeks, and it hasn't worked.
It's really been the message since March.
But in particular, during this current increase, he's seen the cases going up, but he's stuck to that message. This week, he got a little more stern. He threatens, if the case numbers do not reverse course, that next week he will close bars, restaurants, and fitness centers. He wasn't specific as to by how much they have to increase or by how much they have to go down. He's in this, I mean, and he's not alone. Democrat and Republican governors in states all around the country face the exact same situation. They do not want to shut down the economy again.
Yeah, and we on this show, we often talk about the view from Richwood, right? I live in Richwood in Northern Union County. I have not talked to anybody in person about Governor DeWine's address last night, but the view from Richwood Facebook this morning is, here we go again with these un-American business shutdowns. Everyone is ready for this to happen again. The anti-masking crowd is very vocal right now on social media. They still think this is nonsense. They still think it's not important. They still think that at-risk people should self-isolate. And
so when you go to a store, how many people are wearing masks?
Oh, the Dollar General in Richwood, I was there a couple days ago, and I would say definitely the majority were not wearing masks.
See, when I live in suburban Columbus, I never see a person not wearing a mask.
Oh, masks are less common than, it's the minority who is wearing masks.
There's your divide in Ohio right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really incredible. Mike DeWine, he's on the ballot now. He's on the clock. It's the presidential election is over, and now he is up for re-election, and he is definitely concerned about a primary opponent. There has been talk of several candidates going to give him a primary challenge, and politics has to be entering into his mind here. In addition to him being a small government conservative, which is at his core what he is, he really cannot be out front like he was back in March. The governor was out in front of his fellow governors and shutting things down. I don't see that happening this fall.
Judging by comments from people like House Minority Leader Amelia Sykes, the highest ranking Democrat in the House, Democrats aren't happy with any of this either. They don't think it goes far enough. They think that DeWine's bolstering the mask order even just a little bit and doing some other things doesn't go nearly far enough. So again,
and Republican lawmakers are threatening to curtail the governor's authority if he goes too far. So it's a tough spot, and let's just hope it people listen to him and it reverses trend.
We'll see. We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious CBUS is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Last week's election was good news for Democrats in that they got Joe Biden elected president. It marks the end of a four-year journey to unseat President Trump.
But the results are troubling for Democrats here in Ohio, where despite polling showing Biden with a slight lead in the final days before the election, Donald Trump once again won by 8 percentage points, the same margin that he had in 2016.
Yeah, actually, the margin of victory was slightly higher than in 2016. So what does this mean for Ohio Democrats going forward? Joining us today on the podcast is Democratic strategist Antoinette Wilson. Thank you and welcome to Snollygoster.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you. So this seemed to be set up well for Democrats in Ohio. Polls showed the president relatively unpopular here. He's dealing with a tattered economy during this global pandemic. But Trump still won Ohio by 8 points. What do you think that says?
Well, I think one thing you have to realize is no election cycle or no victory is won in one cycle. And, we look to Ohio Democrats and the transitions that we've had with, an incumbent Democratic administration post-Obama and then going into the current administration. And, you have the advantages when you have the White House and the infrastructure that you can create. And I think, unfortunately, from a Democratic perspective and the results of the election in this cycle, we saw that there is, still a dominant base that is maintained. And so, moving forward, there's a lot of transition that has to occur. And, with the change in administrations, that's where the opportunity gets presented. So, when you look at party politics, all right, people look at the state party and, what you're discussing right now, that the strength of the state party is based upon, or the life, I should say, of the state party is based upon local parties. So the stronger local parties are, the stronger a state party can be. And the strength of a administration at the federal level allows that to be bolstered. And, ideally, I have faith that moving forward, that those pieces can come together and, we can have that reestablishment of what the Democratic Party will hope to achieve.
Antoinette, why have white working class voters in particular flocked away from the Democratic Party? You talk about this strong base that President Trump has here in Ohio. A lot of these are working class people who 8, 12, 16 years ago were Democrats. So what's happened there?
So, I think the evidence of that transition, obviously most evident in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. And I'm going to say that was more, gender-based. I think from the candidates that they had before them with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they're clearly in areas where we had specifically Labor Democrats, male Democrats more specifically, we saw the transition from that labor base to Trump.
Yeah, like in Trumbull County, where the General Motors Lordstown
sure.
plant closed.
Mm-hmm.
Trump actually widened his margin of victory there compared to 2016.
He did. You know, and it's not, if we even go back a little further, I mean, 2006 was a big transition for statewide Democrats. That from 1990 to 2006, we essentially had a total Republican administration, and then we had the transition in 2006. All the statewide were successful, with the exception of the candidate for state auditor, Barbara Sykes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting race to look at, because you can look at white Democrats and black Democrats in that area, and the white Democrats pulled more votes than the black Democrats. And so, you know, and Ohio is far from being a cookie cutter. I mean, we are a state with, you know, 8 primary media markets, an additional 4 media markets. And so, you know, a message that plays in the northeastern part of the state definitely does not play in the southwestern part of the state.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just it's a diverse place.
Yeah, 2006, that, of course, was when Ted Strickland was elected governor.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tom Noe scandal was brewing here in the state. And also President Bush became extremely unpopular as right after Katrina, right after he had been reelected in 2004. So it was a unique year, but Democrats did do very well that year. Antoinette, I just want to compare Michigan and Ohio. Very similar states, very similar demographics, but they voted very differently this time around. According to the New York Times exit polls, in Michigan union households, 56% voted for Joe Biden. In Ohio, 57% voted for Donald Trump. That's an 11-point swing. What's going on there, do you think?
You know, once again, when we look at labor households and we look at leadership versus rank and file, you know, that's when we look at unions overall, you have to understand, too, that unions today, and I'm going to say, I mean, I can cite specifically here to Ohio, the partisan breakdown is not solidly Democratic. I mean, here in Ohio, unions are, you know, are mixed. They're Democrat, Republican, and those mixes can be anywhere from, 50-50 to a third Democrat, Republican, Independent. So, you know, like I said, it's that union structure of leadership and also what rank and file, you know, and where their beliefs are and who they believe is the best candidate.
So Michigan Democrats doing a better job holding on to those union households, union members, as Democrats?
Based on those numbers you just gave me, you know, that would be my take on it.
Is that scary for Democratic strategists like yourself who have long relied on union support?
Well, you know, I think just like any candidate, any party, being successful, it's the broader the coalition, the stronger the candidate, the stronger the entity. And so, you know, labor has been a solid force in Ohio Democratic politics and the, you know, the support, the resources they've provided. But, you know, there are, we've seen a pretty significant expansion on, you know, other progressive worlds that are moving forward. And once again, this is, you know, and I look at the last, you know, 10 years where it's finally gotten to a point where we have, you know, increased our candidate pools, a more diverse group of candidates, and also come, you know, support on that end. So, and by support, I mean that we have, you know, outside of the constituents piece of what labor does for the party, that can be, you know, attorneys and other constituency groups,
mm-hmm.
Asians, Latinos, African Americans, the LGBTQ community, those, you know, that's what builds us, right? That's what makes us, well, I should say it's the blessing and the curse. You know, we have that diversity and we're a really, really big tent, but at the same time, because of that complexity, I think it's safe to say makes it a little difficult at times to keep it on track.
Yeah, it's what did Will Rogers say? I I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. because, yeah, the bigger the tent, the more constituencies
That's
you
right.
have, the harder it is to get everyone to row the same way, which is, like I said, a blessing and a curse. One more thing that the New York Times exit polls showed me, comparing again Michigan and Ohio. It really shows the rural-urban divide that Ohio sees. In rural parts of Michigan, Joe Biden got a minimum of 43% of the vote. So not great, but not terrible. In rural parts of Ohio, western Ohio, the Ohio Valley, Joe Biden only managed 26, 27% of the vote. He got killed in those areas, as did Hillary Clinton. What can Democrats do to get that rural vote back up into that low 40% margins there?
So when we look at state party politics, and definitely presidential elections are a great way to increase that base, because people are focused on presidential politics. And, we got to go back to President Obama and his administration, because organizationally it's a critical piece to understand that in party politics, with his win, he maintained OFA, Organizing for America, which throughout his administration was an entity that did a parallel track with state parties, as opposed to an integration piece, which is what we have traditionally seen. And so, coming out of that, I think there'd be a belief that state parties would be bolstered. I think it was the adverse effect. And with the loss with Hillary Clinton, and with the Trump administration, then having that positioning, state parties are obviously in the desert, figuring out what to do next. Mm-hmm. And so, when we look at what occurred in 2020, Biden was at a disadvantage. We had a lot of great candidates in that primary, but with as many candidates. That the more candidates you have, the more factions that are created. And so coming out of a primary, it took a bit, but eventually everybody got on track and was moving forward. But at the same time, you still have the disadvantage of not having that infrastructure in place, and especially in a state like Ohio. And so to your point on the rural piece is that, it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, honestly, the uphill battles of organizing in rural areas has been a long going challenge here. And so once again, I'm going to go back to county parties.
Stronger, the local level.
The local, mm-hmm. It is. It will always come back to those local parties. And so, the more Democrats that can get elected, the more, more moderate candidates that we have in some of those rural counties are definitely going to be the areas where you see the impact for Democrats across the state as we start to see these transitions.
Antoinette, we hear all the time that all politics is local, right? But the Electoral College does rely on a statewide ballot count, and we've heard several times during the past, 9 days at this point, that Ohio is now a solidly red state. We talked to a political scientist last week who said it's at least pink, that's for sure, he thinks. Where do you come down on that? I mean, obviously, as a Democratic strategist, you want the state to not be a red state, but is it a red state at this point?
It's pink, purple, I think those categories where we've been, where we're the crosshair. And when you look at presidential cycles, and when presidential cycles are successful, either way, it defines the color of the state. So, but on statewide politics, on that presidential, in that category, we're red because Trump won. But at the same time, it's not just the statewide piece. You also have to look at our local politics. And in our cities around the state, cities and counties, you do have an overwhelming amount of Democratic office holders. But once again, that's where we see the split on that population base and where the votes are. And, I truly believe we're just, as you said, a pink state or a purple state, whatever it may be. But I still believe that the transition can occur because, you know, for what we've seen, political landscape essentially determines where, you know, where those elections can go. And as we've all seen, especially here in Ohio and many states across the country, you know, there's when that leadership is challenged, it presents opportunity. When leadership is challenged in one party, it will present opportunity for another party, if, you know, depending on what that controversy is and the impact it has.
Speaking of controversy, there is that bribery scandal, $61 million bribery scandal hanging over the State House. Yes.
I forgot.
Kind of forgot about that with all the news. Now, you, Antoinette, you helped Jennifer Bruner win statewide. She won fairly comfortably in her race for the Ohio Supreme Court. So congratulations on that. And that was a bright spot for Democrats this time around. But as I said earlier, Mike DeWine's on the clock. 2022 campaign is underway. Are you optimistic? What is your level of optimism that Democrats can win a statewide race, win the governor's office, win more legislative races than they have now?
Well, you know, thank you on Jennifer's race. You know, it was a very unique win. I've been very fortunate. I've been working with Jennifer as her consultant for, gosh, almost 20 years now in various capacities with all of the races. And so, you know, the uniqueness there was a candidate that, had run and won statewide.
Yeah, getting back to 2006.
State. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 2006, the Secretary of State. But also, you know, she was a judge before she was a Secretary of State. She then ran for the Court of Appeals in 2014 and has been a sitting judge since 2014. And so I say all that because, you know, it is a formula in running as a statewide candidate that allows state partners to be successful. So, you know, that you have to think, those are critical pieces. You know, does that candidate have name ID? Do they have a base of support statewide? And, you know, the necessary evil, can they raise money? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that part, when we look to 2022, I'm optimistic because, you know, I think that there have been a number of new candidates that are coming forward. 2018, as disappointing as it was, the races were close. I mean, they were not, you know, they weren't 10, 15, 20 point losses. And so when we look at that, we see the opportunity of where things can go. I think that piece, you know, having a candidate base, also having the White House that can also be effective in, you know, from a political perspective, like I said, it presents opportunity and not as dire of a situation as it has been.
Antoinette Wilson, a Democratic strategist, talking about where Ohio Democrats go from here following the 2020 election. Antoinette, thanks again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, honoring the shrewdest politician of the last 7 days.
This week it goes to one of many who view nearly identical election margins of victory very differently 4 years later.
That never happens. What are you talking about? Ohio's junior U.S. Senator Rob Portman, like many Republicans who still have to face voters, is, shall we say, reluctant to say Donald Trump lost the election.
Yes. Here's what he tweeted this week, 1 week after the election. He tweets, quote, "The historic turnout in last week's election is a testament to the health of our democracy. Votes are still being counted, and POTUS has every right to insist all legally cast ballots are counted with recounts where appropriate and to go to court over questions about irregularities." Well, let's compare that to what he tweeted the day after the election in 2016.
It's going to be the same, right?
Just four short years ago.
Come on, Rob, it's the same.
Here's what he writes. The day after now, quote, "I am delighted to hear the Republicans retain the Senate majority, and I'm excited to work with President-elect Trump and VP-elect Pence."
And that is after Rob Portman did not endorse President Trump after the release of the Access Hollywood
tape. Yes, he withdrew his endorsement. So presumably he didn't vote for Trump, but still the day after called him the President-elect. He won't call Biden that, even though Biden's margins of victory
are larger both in the popular vote and the electoral
and in the key states. Shrewd. Very shrewd. But he's not alone. Mike DeWine, though. Mike DeWine, that statement must have taken him hours to write. He said congratulations to Vice President Biden, but didn't quite say what he was congratulating him for. He also said all votes should be counted. But then in later interviews, he has called Joe Biden the president-elect. So Mike DeWine has come around.
Again, no evidence of widespread voter fraud has been identified.
What are they, 0 for 15 in court, 0
yeah,
for 16 in court?
Yeah, it's not looking good. They've been beating this drum for years, honestly, with this voter fraud issue, and now they're going to spend all these resources trying to find it. Maybe they'll find something. It certainly does not seem that way. It certainly seems like it's going to be egg on their face when they don't find anything.
I wonder if this debate or investigation over voter fraud will be good in the long run, in that it will show what the facts show, is that voter fraud is extremely rare. And it has mm-hmm. been, even though that mainly Republicans use that as a way to place restrictions on voting, to protect us against voter fraud, when the voter fraud problem is just not a problem.
No, we've heard from experts that it's harder to commit mail-in voter fraud than it is in-person voter fraud in Ohio. Because in Ohio, you have to prove yourself twice when you vote via mail.
Yeah.
In Ohio, you could just show up with any Yahoo's phone bill and cast it. I mean, no one does it, but whatever.
Yeah.
Facts be damned, Mike. Then we'll do it for this week's episode of Snollygoster. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. For our student producer, Jack Long, for our audio extraordinaire, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.